Welcome to Vancouver Opera Offstage. I'm your host, Les Dalla, Chorus Director and Associate Conductor at Vancouver Opera. Join me for this bi-weekly podcast as we connect with opera experts, artists, staff, and others to explore the world of opera on and off the stage. We are honored to share our stories on the unceded homelands of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations.
Good afternoon and welcome to the podcast. This is the 20th episode of Vancouver Opera Offstage, started in April of 2020 during the pandemic. And to celebrate this milestone, I am joined by two wonderful friends and colleagues. I think of them as unsung heroes of the Vancouver Opera team, the fabulous stage managers Teresa Tsang and Marijke Aspik-Bruce. Today, they're going to share with us their world, their perspective of what goes on very much behind the scenes. So I'm delighted to welcome you both, Teresa and Marijke, and I can't wait to hear your stories. So Teresa, let me start with you. I'll ask you both the same questions, and I'm sure you'll have things to agree and disagree or fill each other in on. But for starters, what exactly does a stage manager in opera do?
Oh gosh, Les, that's a complicated question, but to distill it into a nutshell, let's say, a stage manager is hired by a company to really facilitate the delivery of saleable product. And what we do is we make sure that all the artistic elements of a show are practically realized and all the practical elements of a show are artistically executed. By doing that, we also stand as one of the main stewards of the show as a whole.
Wow, that was an incredibly concise response. Marijke, over to you.
Yeah, she's distilled it exceptionally well. We're facilitators of the process. We help pull the theoretical out. And once it becomes more realized with the performers and with the actual costumes, that's usually once we're involved. There are a lot of people who, even before us, do a whole lot of work in imagining the things. And once we're actually on the ground doing the things, we step in to help facilitate that process in the ways Teresa so brilliantly stated. And we're stewards for the art. She's always said that, and I love that phrase. We help caretake the process and the art.
How very true. Let's get really specific in terms of what you do. I know that for stage managers, during rehearsal process, your day always begins earlier than everybody else's and ends later than everybody else's. So take us across one day in the life of a stage manager in a rehearsal.
Yeah, sure. So our day usually starts about half an hour before the rest of the teams. In opera specifically, generally, it's not just one stage manager. We have a team. At Vancouver Opera, usually there's a stage manager, two ASMs, and often an apprentice there to help us as well. And so as a group, we come in, we make sure the rehearsal hall is safe and clean and set up for whatever we'll be doing. That, of course, we're starting to learn looks a bit different and may take a bit more time during COVID. We often set out or make coffee or help facilitate that, depending on who you're working for and what the company's like, coffee, tea, that sort of thing, to make sure the day's comfortable and off to a good start for everybody. And just organizing for the day wherever we're going to start the rehearsal, we're making sure the right props and costumes or stand-ins are ready for us. Then we make sure everybody is punctual and arriving on time, knows what they're doing, where they need to be. And we start the rehearsal up. And that's the point at which we hand it over to the other people, to the director or the maestro. We'll be running the show at that point, depending what kind of rehearsal it is. And we're there taking notes about what's happening, always with an eagle eye to what's going on, what we need to remember artistically, practically, in order to pass on to other team members who aren't in the room. We're there as a note taker, a facilitator, a helper, another set of eyes. And we are also always watching the clock and making sure that breaks happen at the right time, that everybody gets their lunch, etc. All of those good things that we want to make sure of. And assisting as needed with the process, moving props or furniture to facilitate moving from one scene to the other in the hall. We in the hall stand in for all of the crew and creative team members because they can't always be sitting in the hall with us. So we are tracking things for people like costume designers, set designers, technical directors, down to whoever our third props hand will be when we're in the theater. We're trying to think like all of those people in the hall to catch those balls and get everybody through the day so that once we do move to the theater, everybody knows who needs to be doing what and what elements we need to make that all happen. And at the end of the day, we wrap up, and any of those notes we've taken, we distill them into a list that we send out to the production and artistic team. We are updating the schedule for the next day and making sure it gets out to everybody in a timely fashion so that they know when they need to arrive and what they'll be working on. And then dealing with any of the other fun things that have come up during the day and tidying up. And again, with COVID, this will all look a little bit different, and prepping for the next part of the process. That's my take on a typical day.
All of that is true. Technically, what we're doing is we're making sure that everybody has what they need to do their best work. That's kind of our responsibility. And so sometimes a funny thing that we do is we stand in on stage for people who aren't there. So if it's a chorus member or one of our supernumeraries, our extras, who needs to come in and deliver the drinks, say, we'll have to take that up. Or if someone, for example, is not feeling well and can't make it to a rehearsal, then we'll have to stand up there and fill their spot and make the rest of the rehearsal go. Scheduling as well, we make sure that everyone's getting their costume fittings and make sure that meetings are happening. And it's a lot of coordination. That's what we do on a daily basis.
Absolutely. And I would say there's probably no opera stage manager in Canada who hasn't at least been at some time or other a stand-in for a waiter in Bohème, for example. Right?
Yep.
In rehearsals, you're standing there giving out the drinks in Act Two.
Yeah, pretty much. Making sure that everything gets on stage at the right time. And
yeah. And that's something that's very different about opera from straight theater productions, is that we have different groups of performers that rehearse with us at different times for different durations. And so we will have only the principals for 6 hours a day. And so during those times, that's when we're up on our feet, often for big choral pieces and numbers, standing in for the person who has the action that affects the principals at the moment. So handing them their coats, their drinks, delivering the letter in Traviata or whatever, right? Like, we'll stand in for all of those people. Or sometimes during chorus rehearsals, an apprentice will be standing where the principal would be if there's nobody else to be doing that. So yeah, we do all that sort of filling in sometimes.
And is it fair to say, picking up on what you talked about, some differences with straight theater, that one of the absolute prerequisites if you're going to be a stage manager in opera is that you have to read music?
Absolutely. Reading music, as you well know, Les, is its own language.
I've never actually learned, so I'm still working on it. Sorry.
Yeah, well, I consider myself quite a bit behind you, so there you go. But definitely, it is its own language. And if you can't speak the language, it's really, really difficult to do the work.
I've seen people ASM opera and get by with just very rudimentary, but you can't stay in opera and not pick it up to a pretty serious degree.
Yeah, because what you work off of is a piano vocal score, right? It's not like you're working off the libretto, just the words. You need the extra music. So when you're presented with a score like Louis Riel or Copernicus, if you don't know what you're looking at, it's not the easiest thing to try and catch up to.
Well, and then you get into like newer works. You're like, what is this I'm looking at? If you don't know music, you'd be totally lost in some of those. If all you're used to doing is getting by counting to four, you're going to be in trouble with the more current works.
Great. Well, I'd like to ask you both, how did you get into this profession? And maybe, Marijke, I'll stay with you to begin.
Sure. I always loved storytelling and being a part of that, and specifically community storytelling. I remember one of my best friends and I growing up when we were very young, we would write plays together and use my bed as a stage and perform them for my family. So I was sort of loved that. And as I got into high school and got more and more seriously into acting, I realized that I really hated being in front of people to that degree. My stage fright was terrifying and I did not like that part, but I loved helping facilitate it. And I was very organized. So I quickly found that my acting teacher also entrusted me with a lot of the organization, and I did a bit of lighting. But what I really liked was feeling like I was in the driver's seat a little bit in the background. And I've done that in other works where you're driving the bus, but they're making the magic in it. And that's a really fun part. So I did a bit of that in high school. And then when I got to university, I think I took the intro level to acting and was like, oh yeah, this isn't work that I want to do. But working on stage shows at UBC, where I did my bachelor's degree, really felt right. And I was lucky enough to fall in with a friend, Melissa Tsang, no relation, who was stage managing the opera. And I ASM'd for her in second year or something and was really captivated by it. I'm just going to stop for a second because something that I want to say that was actually before that. So when I was in grade 12, I was lucky enough to participate in Vancouver Opera's work experience program through my high school. And we went, and it was a production of Bohème, actually, in 2002, I think. And we came to a rehearsal, I think, and backstage to observe and see what the process was like. And the woman who was playing Musetta, and it's so terrible that I cannot remember her name right now. I remember her coming and talking to us in the side lobby. But one of my friends and I, because we'd sort of started to get into the backstage stuff, we decided we wanted to shadow the stage management team. And Teresa was there. And I remember sitting with her through, I think I was with you for Act 2, actually. And then I was over on the other side for Act 3. And watching all that process in the grand scale in the Queenie was just mind-blowing to be able to coordinate that much. And I really probably caught the opera bug then, watching Teresa do what she did.
Teresa, over to you.
I actually came to stage management and theater completely kind of by accident. I took music lessons and dance lessons through my childhood, and so was not a stranger to doing recitals of either that sort or performing in dance recitals, that kind of thing. But really, theater and theater work was not really part of my growing up. It wasn't until I was looking at what I wanted to take in university that I decided maybe I want to do film. And so at UBC, to get into the film department, you have to take first year's theater. So I got into the theater department and through my first year realized that film was not my bag at all. And I really, really liked theater. So I stayed in theater. And then the opera part of it, I actually have to blame Nancy Hermiston for that. Again, a complete and total accident. Nancy's first year when she took over the opera program at UBC, she went to the theater department and said, I need a stage manager. They need to read music. And at that time, I was the only kid in my class who knew how to read music. So I got thrown over to the opera department. May I say, with Jeremy Baxter as well, who he lit La Voix and he will be lighting Amal as well. So the two of us went over there and I'd never really done opera before. Like I knew what opera was, but was not really at all an aficionado of any kind of operatic repertoire. And I get Nancy Hermiston, who her first outing, she's like, okay, we're going to do these 3 one-act shows. Here's the music. And also, do you know anything about costumes? Because we need someone to dress everybody. And it's like, okay. So that was kind of my first experience with opera and opera stage management and just opera in general. And I got to tell you, it was amazing. It was hard work. It was a lot of fun. It was loud and fast. And I found out that I really liked it. So that was it for me, really. And from there, just about right after I graduated, about a year and a half after school, I was hired at Vancouver Opera as an assistant stage manager. And it's been pretty much opera since. So it's interesting that way that you just kind of fall into these things.
What is it you love about being a stage manager? Who wants to go first?
I'll answer that question first. I mean, there's so much to really enjoy about stage managing. I love the fact that you're always learning new stuff. The music education I've gotten over the breadth of my career is incredible. You listen to maestros and singers and directors talk about the piece that you're working on. And it is an amazing way to understand what you're doing, but also understand in terms of historical context, what that piece meant, how it relates to the world nowadays and stuff like that. And then people you meet and you learn things from everybody you meet. Like when I work in Wexford, and you meet up with all the Italians and a lot of my best pasta recipes I've learned from those guys. I suppose what I really love the most is the privilege of just being there to watch and hear people do amazing things. Like I worked for Garsington Opera a couple summers ago for the first time. and I was in London for my birthday. And it also happened to be the day of the Zitz probe for the piece I was working on, which was a brand new commission called The Skating Rink. David Sawyer was the composer there. And so my birthday present that year was to sit in this Zitz probe and hear an orchestral version of this music that the world was hearing for the first time. I mean, that is such an amazing gift. And I would not give that up for the world. So really, for me, it's that kind of thing.
Yeah, I would agree. For me, the biggest thing that I get out of it, I think, is the teamwork aspect and the colleagues and just the breadth of experience that you get. No two projects are alike. I love how big it makes the family of colleagues that you have. There are some people that I will work with 4 times a year and some people that I will work with once every 5 years. And that's joyous either way, right? And just the coming together to make such a monumental thing, especially I feel that in opera that it is so big, and Teresa hits it on the nail there, sitting in the Zitz probe where everything really distills every opera at some point that I've worked. I get a little choked up in the Zitz probe because I'm like, oh, wow, we are doing this. And we're bringing together, you know, some operas, you've got 200 artists involved. You know that feeling when you're watching a rock band who are really in the pocket and all together? That times 100. Because there's just so many and we're just all on tempo together. And it's a pretty spectacular thing to be a part of creating that art with a bunch of humans that you love and respect.
It's so true, isn't it? I mean, opera is all about the collaboration, and everybody I can think of would name the Zitz probe as being their favorite rehearsal, because it is the first time suddenly 60 more people are in the room or more making this gorgeous music, and the chorus is all there and it's all just focused on the score. So people don't have to worry about running from one end of the stage to the other to be together with the maestro, but it's just about relishing the music in that moment.
As a stage manager, that is actually a reason why we like the Zitz probe so much, is it's the one rehearsal where we just get to see.
Yeah. That's right. Of course, I never even thought of it.
It's all on you. That's the only time we really, I mean, there are moments, but that is our chance to enjoy the piece. And having that moment before moving into the theater really helps stoke the fire for me personally to get through the tech process. And that's something you miss in theater. And in theater, again, the final room run or whatever you call it is always amazing. But as a stage manager in a small theater company, it's often just you or you and an apprentice, and you're all running off your feet to make sure that rehearsal happens. And so to be able to sit and enjoy it is, yeah, as Teresa says, such a privilege and an honor to get to see that art being made and take a deep breath and say, cool, into the fire we go.
What are some of the aspects of your job that might surprise people? Teresa, I think you started the last one. Do you want to start this one, Marijke?
I haven't actually thought of one yet. Most people I meet either very quickly have a general sense of what a stage manager might be, or they have absolutely no idea and everything we do surprises them. So it's very hard to tell. You know, I think people do get confused when I come home from rehearsal. If I've been the ASM on a production of Bohème, say, and we're rehearsing Act 2 all day, I won't have sat down or eaten much for 10 hours because you're kind of trying to be 10 people at once. And people are surprised by that sometimes. I guess I would say what people are usually surprised by is that there doesn't seem to be a place where our job stops. And just the number of tasks that we're responsible for in a day is the biggest surprise when we're actually breaking it down for people. But I can't think of one thing. I'm sure something will hit me later. It's all pretty mundane. I mean, we're handing people coats. We're writing down notes. We're publishing schedules on a computer. What about you, T? Have you thought of any big surprises?
Well, I mean, to us, it's mundane because we do it. I guess a lot of people are surprised by how well and how deeply we need to know a show. Musically, practically, the personalities of the people in the room. It is a job of constant assessment and reassessment. Because you are, at the end of the day, responsible for everybody's safety as well. So you need to know the show so well that you know where your assets are. So for example, like when we did Nixon in China, I was ASMing at the time. We're in Act 2 during the ballet scene. And on stage, there's a huge set of bleachers that at the end of this act, it needs to get off stage, and it takes a lot of people to do it. And it's all the onstage people that have to push it off, and everyone has an assigned job. Well, towards the end of the act, two of our supernumeraries come off stage early and they're holding up a third super, and she's fainted on stage, and they've caught her and they're taking her off stage. So it's like, oh my gosh, get her a chair, get her some water, call first aid. There's a huge set change coming up. She, being the trooper that she is in her kind of half fainted consciousness, is saying, I'm okay, I'm okay, I could do the set change. And I'm like, you're sitting there and drinking this water and we will take care of it. But at that point, I had to assess who I had, who could handle extra work, who could handle the change, like a quick change being thrown at them. And if I had enough people to kind of move around to make this functionally happen. So that's also knowing the personalities of the people you have around you. Is there a chorister or another super who can handle more than the task that they're assigned at that time and can understand it quickly enough that we can just throw them in there? So you have to know your people that deeply as well as what needs to happen and how much music you have to make that happen in. And so you're calculating all this at the same time.
Yeah, that's very true. Once the show's on, we're the coach, right? Or I'll often, to sports friends trying to say what I do or explain why I'm so busy all day, I'll say, we're kind of the goalie all day. We may not look busy, but we got to keep our eye on that puck at all times and know where everybody is at all times in case you have to throw somebody in.
Yeah, for sure.
Or have to run in yourself, as you and I have both had to do, I think.
Oh, yeah. I've done that again, Nixon in China, to cover the last bit of this set change. I had to go out there with a bunch of supers. And luckily, I could stand behind a flag and do this, push a table out into the middle of the stage, lock the wheels down. And then I had to get under the table and sit there for the rest of the act. Luckily, it was not long, and wait till the act finished so I could get off stage at the end. And so you go out there and you do this. And I'm sitting under the table thinking, see, I'm a professional. As you're sitting under a table waiting for the music to stop. But that's what you have to do.
And I'm sure you're also thinking, they're not paying me nearly enough to be doing this. I need a raise. Wow, I didn't even know that story about Nixon.
See, because it was that successful. You didn't even know.
Yes. And this is why I say you guys are the unsung heroes, because you have to take care of everything that people don't even think about.
Well, or when something goes off the rails, you just have to jump in. I mean, with Evita on the final dress, I think it was, somebody wasn't making a quick change. And I just had to run out and move those staircases. We had these big, huge staircases on casters. And I just had to go and do the scene change because I knew that ensemble member wasn't going to make it in time from his quick change.
Yeah, we're certainly also the ones that we can never give up. We have to rally the troops, and we have to be the one or the department. We cannot give up ever. So I think that would surprise people too.
For the cheerleaders and the goalie.
And the referee.
Yeah.
Truly, you do handle all aspects of it. Just for our listeners, we've been talking a lot about being in the rehearsal hall. And especially in North America, most companies don't own their own theaters. So it's not like we have the luxury of rehearsing in the Queenie Theater for weeks on end. Usually we have a 3-week period of rehearsals, of staging, and then we move into a very condensed period of technical rehearsals in the theater, usually just 4 or 5 days. And then poof, it's dress rehearsal opening night. And a lot changes in what you do. We always see you at the table in the room there. Suddenly, no one sees you. You're backstage and again, making all this magic happen, making sure you're like hurting people, especially with kids' choruses. So that must be the most fun, right? Making sure all the kids are there ready for their entrance and that sort of thing. I love standing by the stage management desk during performances if I'm not in the pit, because all the calls you have to make, the lighting calls, getting people standing by, it's all the standby calls too, 2 minutes, or the next person whose role entrance is in 5 minutes, you've got to give them that 5-minute call. And it's so nonstop what you do. You, like a conductor, are living in every moment of what you're doing, but you have to anticipate everything that's happened. And then once something has happened, you also have to let it go, even if it maybe didn't go as smoothly as whatever, right? So you're operating really on three different time zones simultaneously, which I'm not sure that people can appreciate. And especially, as you say, with opera, unlike theater, there is no click track. There's no soundtrack. So if something goes wrong, people can correct or modify. But when everything is having to line up from the pit to the stage to off stage, sometimes there's something being piped in from the hall. It's just a really, really intense position that you find yourselves in, that we all do, but you're the ones who are having to make sure that everybody's prepped to go. So you've already started to answer my next question, which is, what are some of the most nerve-wracking aspects of the job and what are the most rewarding?
They're the same thing usually, for me at least.
I agree.
Yeah, usually the most rewarding is overcoming the most nerve-wracking moments. And it depends. I mean, things don't have to be going off the rails for it to be nerve-wracking. Last fall, La Traviata was the first show that I was the stage manager at Vancouver Opera. And I'll tell you, opening night, when I sat down at that desk and was like, oh, right, this production with 200 people moving forward on the track that Maestro is setting for it is up to me in a large respect. And the audience, the 2,000 people out there, that's a lot if you stop to think about it, which ideally you don't. You just move on because you're like, well, but I know how to do my job and I'm just going to sit here and do it. But the scale of opera, that is the fun part, is that just the scale of it in and of itself can be quite nerve-wracking. But once you know you can do it, you just stay on that train and keep it going. But yeah, it's the unpredictability and anything could happen. I mean, particularly if you have special effects or flames on stage. Any dangerous aspect will be more nerve-wracking. I can think of a few productions that we had particularly dangerous things on, even heavy things with wheels that are getting rolled around, slides that project cast members into the pit onto a gurney, for example. Yeah, there are a lot of large scenic elements that can be very nerve-wracking, time-sensitive things, like when you get into musicals, quick changes, anything like that, that just hinges on every member of the team that's involved in that moment being perfect is nerve-wracking. And there's a lot of that in opera, but you just rehearse it and you practice it and you trust each other and you get through it every time because you know if one thing out of everybody's control goes a little sideways, you're all there to pull it back up. There's also headsets failing. Like there are all sorts of fun technological fails that we go through that we suddenly have to be swapping the stage manager's headset in the middle of a show while she's trying to call it. Yeah, anything can go wrong. That's the beauty of live performance. And the more people and aspects you involve, the more can go wrong and the more rewarding it is when it all goes right and you know you've got it.
I agree. It's like one in the same. It's when you can overcome all that stuff and you know that your team never left you. It's kind of a really, really great feeling. I mean, nerve-wracking during shows, I guess I'm such an old bat nowadays that really, to me, it's like, it's game day. Let's go. Let's do it. And even though the show is supposed to have a set pattern, I'm always expecting that it will never truly follow that path. Because it's live performance, and that's why you go to live performance. That's why we do live performance, because it's always a little different every time. But as long as you know the goal, then the road you take can meander, and you know where you're going, and you'll get there. I guess for me, what's more nerve-wracking these days is when the alchemy of the rehearsal hall starts going funny. That's really when, and Marijke, you probably heard me say this before, it's like on occasion, for whatever reason it is, a director might lose the room. And that, to me, makes almost an audible noise. It almost makes this audible grinding noise as you grind to a halt. And to me, that's like, okay, now this is going to be a little bit harder, but we're all just going to have to all pull it together and hold it together and keep it going. And when you can still keep people behind the project, that's when it's rewarding, even in those harder situations.
The worst thing only happens if you all believe it's going to happen or if enough people do.
That's why you have to be ever the optimist.
Yeah. Yeah.
And ever the believer that you can make it work.
Which some moments is harder to than others.
It is. And as you mentioned, Les, I mean, particularly at Vancouver Opera, our technical period is very short. So a lighting designer may get between 9 and 12 hours to light an entire show, which also means that a stage manager gets the lighting calls and gets the staging cue calls in that same period of time. So you have maybe 9 to 12 hours to learn an entire show from a practical, technical point of view, and then you got to do it. And you just got to strap the skates on and go.
One of my favorite things to ask people is, what are some of your favorite operas? Do give us some highlights of shows. Who wants to go first?
I'll start. Teresa's giving me that look. I would say one of my most recent highlights still is The Overcoat with You Less, which is an opera adaptation. Some of our listeners will have seen it at Vancouver Opera or be familiar with the original staged movement piece by Morris Panych. He wrote the libretto for this. The alchemy of that piece was just on. And it was a three-way co-production, which is always exciting because you have extra resources. Extra challenges too, because then all of the management of those companies are also trying to work together. So it makes the group even bigger. But I don't think I'll ever get over The Overcoat and that just magical, beautiful experience. The music was James Rolfe, libretto was Morris Panych. He also directed, Les, you conducted, and the set designer was Ken McDonald, costumes by Nancy Bryant, lighting by Alan Brody, and of course, Wendy Girling did the movement for us. And we had two movement performers in the piece as well. So to have them immersed in the world of opera and everybody was learning together and we were all going out for food and drinks together all the time. And it just really was magic, I thought, that show. That was definitely one big highlight for me. Do you want to go back and forth? Do you do one and then I'll do another?
Yeah, let's do that actually.
Okay. For Vancouver Opera, my big three, I guess, would be a couple of shows I did with you, Les, actually. So West Side Story, which was my first show in the big chair, it was such a great production. And that cast was really wonderful to work with. And it was lovely to see people coming out of their comfort zones. So like the dancers not wanting to sing in front of the opera singers, but then it all turned out okay. And the opera singers not wanting to dance in front of the dancers, but it all turned out okay. And they all pulled together and helped each other out. And it was a really fun project to do, something that we generally don't do, but it was a lovely and great production. The other one is The Last Butterfly we did, which you conducted, Les. And I think it's been mentioned on this podcast more than once. It was double cast, but both casts were beautiful in their very distinct ways. And just kind of the way the set worked and the way everything worked, you were really able to focus on the characters of that show. And it reminded me how beautiful the music is. Butterfly is one of those ones where it's like, oh yeah, this is really great stuff. This is really beautiful music. And as you said, Les, the humming chorus, making that sunrise and coordinating with you and the orchestra and the lighting to give that sense of longing and waiting and anticipation. It was a lovely moment. I really liked that moment every night. And again, The Last Elixir we did with the ice cream truck, that was a lot of fun. Great cast, really lively, lovely show, worked really well. Loved working with Brenna Corner, who did the restage of it. So yeah, those were my three from Vancouver Opera that I can currently remember.
That's always the way, hey? My favorite operas are the last three I worked on, right? But it is, it's always such a joy, like everything's so great. That Elixir was fun. It was so beautiful. And that cast were just like absolute darlings. And there were two vehicles on stage for it. And what a bit of fun to play with, having a big ice cream truck that we got to drive on and off stage every night and a motor car with a sidecar, which I had a lot of fun driving around rehearsal. Yeah, I'd say some other like recent highlights for me was working on Fidelio at Pacific Opera. It's just a really neat piece and it's not often presented and it's just such beautiful music. And the design was stunning and getting to work with Wim Trompert, who was the director from the Netherlands, was really cool. I always feel at home if there's a Dutch person in the room. It's always nice for me. And then last summer, I got to stage manage a new opera. It's, I think, somewhat still in development at the Banff Center called Silent Light by Paolo Prestini was the composer. Roy Svavik did the libretto and Thaddeus Strasburger did the direction and the design. And I have to say, really new opera. There's a whole next level when you're doing new opera. We tend to be very siloed in the arts. Like even in this conversation, we were like, oh, well, opera is quite different from straight theater in these ways. And I love finding the ways that we're similar. And I find in new opera that happens a lot. And just the evolution of art forms I find very fascinating. And so working on new opera for me is always very, very rewarding.
Okay, back to me then. Couple ones, one from UBC and one from BAM Center. The UBC one, Louis Riel actually was good fun to work on just because it was certainly a challenge and people just don't do it. So it was nice to be able to get a crack at something that I probably will never do again. From the BAM Center, the same kind of work, Copernicus, was very interesting to work on, written in a totally made up language with a combination of French and German and a little bit of English in there. It's the only opera I've ever had to call off the full orchestral score because the score is so dense that the piano vocal reduction really can't describe to you what's going on. And it's also one of those pieces where there's a moment in time where everybody and everything, all the instrumentalists, all the singers are going on their own line, creating a cacophony of sound. And it's one of those times where we all had to look at each other and agree that for about this many bars, it's just going to be what it is. And then the conductor will bring it back. We'll call like a last four bar warning, and then we'll bring it back together. It was really difficult to kind of separate out and hear what you were supposed to do. So you just took your line, kept following it, and then you got the four bar call, and then you counted it out, and then you ended all together. It worked every time, I'll have to say. But that was an interesting piece to work on as well. And also to take student practicums through it was really interesting to kind of help them navigate through that show as well. So those were my next two.
This isn't an opera, but I will say one experience at Vancouver Opera that always sticks out for me is when we did Evita. I mean, any of the musicals that we've done, because it's just stretching a little bit outside of our world. But Oviedo was where I really felt the chemistry come together for us, overcoming some of the challenges of it. And it's a big show. It's got a lot of quick changes. It's got a lot of stuff going on. We had an amazing cast, great creative team overall. And it was the fastest show we've ever had to do, or I've ever had to do with that company. I would say every show I work on, I find a new challenge. So I'm like, oh, right. Opera isn't used to this yet, with some newer works like Dead Man Walking, which we did in the first iteration of the festival, directed by Joel Ivany. Jonathan Darlington was the conductor for that one. And usually standard operas are 2 to 4 acts, and each act is in a single place. So we have these 5-minute scene changes, and we just let that happen during a pausa or during intermission. Or if you're lucky enough and the set designer is kind to you, it's one static set the whole time and you just add some ivy or something like that in between. I have to say the set design for that first festival we did was very, very brilliantly realized. The set designer created a single design that played for 2 different operas and a big changeover in between. But Dead Man Walking had, I'm going to be wrong on the number, but something like 17, 18 scenes. And it was constantly changing location. And so how do you tech that in an opera tech timeline? And watching the team, I was just an ASM on that, but watching stage manager Kate Porter and all of us just work together to figure out how to get through that in time was fun. And the music, on first listening to it, I really wasn't sold. But once it was in the singers' mouths and once the orchestra was there, I really like that opera, actually. The music of it's very haunting and it's a really interesting piece.
May I just also interject to do a shout out for Erhard Rahm, who designed the set that could work for both Otello and Dead Man. And also, of course, he designed that fabulous Nixon in China, which has traveled all over the world. So just wanted to put a little shout out to Erhard and his creative genius.
Yeah, he did a brilliant job on that. And watching in tech the set changeover from the Otello to the Dead Man was really neat to see. And even in his drawings, when we first got it, I remember laying them out with both teams and we were like, oh, wow, look how he's just quite brilliant work to make it flow both ways. I mean, it was sort of a big monolithic looking gray, almost sort of concrete. But the feel of it for each show was so different just from pull this forward, bring in some chains, put a Coke machine on stage or whatever, right? Like it just transformed. And yeah, it was very brilliant. He did a great job.
Teresa, any more shows?
Yeah. With Wexford, I would have to say I loved doing Mascagni's Ratcliffe, Guillermo Ratcliffe. I understand why it's not done very often. It is a mega sing for every single person on stage. but the music is actually quite exquisite. And that show looked and sounded fantastic. And also with Wexford Silent Night, when we did it in the anniversary year, I am very proud of the work that we all did on that show. That show, Kevin Putt's show, is also a very lovely piece. And we all survived having a bagpiper backstage piping right behind us all. So that was really great. And the show I did last summer at Garsington was a beautiful production of Turn of the Screw. Louisa Miller directed that one. Sophie Bevan sang the governess. And I think you can still watch it online through the Garsington website, but it is a beautiful piece. And again, I'm slightly turning into a Britain fan.
I would love maybe to wrap this up with just something light and fun. Can you share some of the craziest funny things that you've experienced in the profession?
There's nothing like cueing on a singer who was supposed to go through a door, a freestanding door, and then having him turn around and throw the doorknob at you because he's pulled it off, and then have to figure out how to get him on stage. That's always fun, that kind of stuff. Or, you know, the time in Banff doing Don Giovanni. And so I call the curtain up and there's the Don strumming his mandolin on stage. And then there's a funny look on his face. And I'm like, oh, weird. And then I look into the maestro cam and there's no one there. And I'm like, uh-oh. And then my ASM says, do you want me to send maestro in? It's like, yes, send him in, send him in, send him in. I apologized to maestro after and he looked at me and said, oh, what are you apologizing for? What happened? And it's like, nothing, nothing happened. So there's stuff like that. Or the time when in the skating rink, when stage management had to wear costumes and we were in like these, we kind of looked like park rangers. We had green polo shirts on and black kind of cargo shorts with these funny industrial belts. Well, we're doing a running scene change. We're all out there moving stuff around. My belt explodes. The clip explodes and my pants start falling down. So I'm trying to do a scene change and collect the bits of my belt and keep my pant from falling down while I'm on stage. So stuff like that's always fun.
Yeah, it's always a joy. Or if the wrong pairs of shoes were brought for a quick change and you have to dash across and hope you get back. Final dress rehearsals where the wig person maybe didn't hear their call and isn't quite ready for the quick change. And you decide whether or not everything comes to a grinding halt. The times a singer gets sick and you're flying somebody across the country and putting them into something.
Or if a singer gets sick at an orchestra tech and they're looking at you as the ASM who has not a lot to do on that show and says, can you walk the entire role of Suzuki while you're colleague Kinza Tyrrell sings it from the pit, and you have to say, yeah, okay, sure, I'll do that.
Oh dear.
Or less, if you recall the time where I'm sitting at the desk and you're standing behind me and we're staring at the maestro cam and it goes into a reset and then maestro kind of slides out of the camera and it's like, oh my gosh, what just happened? And do I have to send you down there to go kind of see what happened? But then he popped back up with his water bottle, so it was all okay. But that was a fun moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the great things about live theater, right? And this just reinforces how I started off by saying that literally you are the unsung heroes because you have to take care of so many things and people rarely get to see you come out on stage and take a bow. Have you guys ever taken a bow? I'm trying to think about this.
No.
Actually, that was very funny. On Traviata, we were asked to for final night. They wanted everybody to come out on stage and bow. And the crew looked at me and said, we're not doing it unless you do it. And I was like, well, that sucks because there's no way I'm doing it because I have to call it and I can't see and call the curtain in. I mean, I could have, but I really didn't want to. Wouldn't have been the best. Yeah. Nobody feels that's necessary. The crew wanted me and my team to do it. And so they would have done it with us, I think, but they didn't want to do it either.
No, there's a reason why we're in the back.
Yeah.
Right. And we're still working. We're still on the gig. So there's still stuff to do.
We're not off the gig until the audience is standing and walking out, right? We have to call the lights up for them to safely exit the building. So we're on the gig until they're out.
Well, may I just say thank you not only for doing this interview today. I knew this would be really interesting with all the things that you have to say. Because again, I've had singers on here, conductors, directors, and you know, people talk about the element of opera from their own perspective. But you offer one that very few people actually really understand. And so it is all encompassing. and thank you for all the work that you do. It's such a pleasure for me to work with you. I really feel like we have a team, and the energy that you bring is always so positive. And I always feel that you are the calmest people in the room, which is a good thing. And as you said earlier on, I'm forever in your debt for all the coffee that you've made that I've consumed on rehearsals over the years, which is like the last thing that somebody would think that stage manager does, but you always do that too. So for the many, many, many things that you do, you have my gratitude. And well, Marijke, you and I will be in the room soon on a mall.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
And I know, Teresa, you just completed the very successful Le Voix Humaine. And of course, with all the protocols, it's very, very different these days, but we're still doing it. And so I'm grateful for that. Thank you again, Teresa and Marijke, for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Les. It's been a lot of fun.
Really my pleasure. And it's a great way to celebrate our 20th episode. So thank you and see you both very soon.
Next time on the podcast, we'll give you a behind-the-scenes glimpse into the workings of putting together A Mall and the Night Visitors. This new take on a delightful holiday classic will premiere digitally on Saturday, December the 12th, and will feature an exciting BC cast alongside members of the Vancouver Opera Chorus. On the podcast, we'll be speaking with director Sarah Peltzer and surprise members of the cast.
We'd love to hear from you if you have any feedback or suggestions for upcoming guests. You can reach us via email at online@vancouveropera.ca. And don't forget to check out this episode's special features on our website at vancouveropera.ca/offstage.
This has been Vancouver Opera Offstage. I'm your host, Les Dalla. As always, you can keep up to date with Vancouver Opera at vancouveropera.ca, where you can sign up for our e-newsletter or follow us on social media. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.